can get one from Edmund. We don't need to.
All right, if we could come to order. Welcome this morning to Commissioner's Court. As we begin, is there someone here who would volunteer to do our invocation? Ask the blessing upon our time. Is there someone here who would do that for us? All right. Chief, thank you. Let's all stand together, and then would you also lead us in the pledges?
Gracious Heavenly Father, we thank you for this wonderful day that you blessed us with. We just ask you to be with this meeting today as we all brought together, that the decisions made will be decisions in favor of the people and of you, Lord. We ask your blessings on all the endeavors, protection for our first responders throughout the world. Father, we give all the glory and credit to you. Again, we ask you to be with this meeting and give us guidance and direction in the decisions made. In Christ's name and for his sake, amen.
Amen. Now our pledges, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you, and you may be seated. All right, as we move forward, let the record reflect that all are present. Do I have a motion to approve the court agenda today? Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. All right, proclamations, resolutions, and presentations. Our presentation of Employee of the Month. Yes. How are you?
Good, and you? Good morning, Commissioners and Judge. Thank you for this opportunity to recognize the Employee Recognition Committee and to recognize our wonderful employees. Can I please have Sergeant Alexander Randall to the front?
Good morning, Judge and Commissioners. My name is Alexander Randall. I am a sergeant with Constable Gable's office. I am honored to read the nomination that was made in support of Detective Jared Tunstall. Detective Tunstall is assigned to the Criminal Investigations Division. He is responsible for the investigation of various offenses, including assaults, crimes against children, robbery, fraud, theft, and burglary. Detective Tunstall has served with the Montgomery County Precinct 3 Constable's Office for numerous years. Detective Tunstall works cooperatively with many state and local agencies. Detective Tunstall displays diligence and a strong work ethic. He is an exceptional teammate and always works to uphold our agency's values of honor, integrity, professionalism, honesty, and respect. Recently, Detective Tunstall investigated theft and fraud allegations pertaining to a Montgomery County-based pool company. Detective Tunstall worked closely with the Montgomery County District Attorney's Office to complete multiple search warrants and the associated law enforcement operations. Detective Tunstall communicated with numerous alleged victims who had suffered significant financial losses as a result of their interactions with this pool company. As a result of Detective Tunstall's efforts, an individual was arrested for a felony theft offense. Detective Tunstall's work was displayed on various media outlets, including KPRC Houston, Facebook, and the Montgomery County Police Reporter. Through his investigative dedication, Detective Tunstall has brought credit to the law enforcement community of Montgomery County, Texas. I am proud to have Detective Tunstall serving with our agency and serving the people of Montgomery County. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Absolutely.
Well done, Detective. Thank you so much. Congratulations, Detective. All right, as we move forward, we're going to move to citizens' comments. Now, as if there's someone here who would like to make comments from the public on either our consent or our open agenda, this would be the opportunity to do that. For other comments that don't have anything to do with what has been noticed, then we will do those under our time at the end. Is there anyone here who would like to come forward and speak? Yes. If you would identify yourself, and we have 3 minutes. If you have anything that you'd like to hand to us.
Good morning. Joe Losetta, resident for over...
Joe, if I could finish.
Sorry.
For the record. If you have anything that you'd like to hand to us, if you would bring it up, ask permission to bring it to the dais.
Okay, got it.
Thank you so much.
Has the clock begun?
Okay. It begins,
we'll start over. Joe Losetta, resident for over 30 years. Let's start on November 3rd, 2020. Nothing else matters until we figure out what happened on that day. And restoring trust in the election process of Montgomery County is the biggest responsibility and challenge of this court. And that's an understatement. And yet you're about to spend millions to replace one electronic voting system with another. The HART 2.5 system that you've selected, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but it was certified by the Federal Elections Assistance Commission in September 2020. I repeat, September 2020, before the 2020 election in November. Let that sink in. This fact alone should cause the court to stop and think more critically before taking this action. A system examination was then conducted in Austin at the offices of Secretary of State in January of this year by a Secretary of State who was appointed and never confirmed by the state legislature. The system was certified on April 1 of this year by Deputy Secretary of State. Much has happened since September 2020. Multiple election 2020 fraud cases in swing states, Maricopa, Arizona full forensic audit results released in September of this year, cybersecurity and legal experts have provided volumes of evidence showing that all electronic systems, not just Dominion, are vulnerable to hacking. Question to the court, have any of you reviewed this evidence? I don't know for sure. However, I personally doubt it based on your actions. The court decision to replace the current system with a HART 2.5 system was based largely on the point that the system has been certified by the Secretary of State. What is the backup plan, court? Not if, but when the HART 2.5 is determined to be unfit for purpose before the 2022 election. The court will be held accountable despite the anticipated justification that the HART 2.5 system was certified by the Office of the Secretary of State. Your apparent lack of due diligence and rejection of the option to keep the current system operating until further notice will be remembered. And I want to repeat that date. The current system was certified in September 2020 before the debacle of the election 2020 that we all remember and are trying to sort out. Thank you very much.
Appreciate your comments. Thank you so much. Is there anyone else who would like to make comments on any of the issues? Yes.
Thank you for hearing my comments today.
Could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes, Kathy Losetta.
Yes.
Today, this court is planning to purchase new voting equipment based solely on the Texas Secretary of State recommendations. Texas has not had an approved Secretary of State since Governor Abbott has been in office. So why is this court basing its decision to spend $9 to $11 million on a Secretary of State recommendation who has not been approved by the legislature and therefore not approved by the voters? The new voting equipment the court is planning to purchase was certified in September 2020. That is before the disastrous 2020 election. That fact alone should stop this court in its tracks. Meanwhile, four counties in Texas are going through some sort of election audits. Our concern is not about Montgomery County Election Central or the people who run our elections. Being a precinct chair, many of these people are my friends, and I believe there is high integrity and good intent. This is not about the people. It is about what happens beyond Election Central and when data is uploaded to Austin. There are many great minds working to find a better way to conduct elections in the future to make it easier to vote and harder to cheat. So why is this court rushing to replace one hackable system with another? This court will be held accountable despite the claim that the new HART 2.5 system was certified by the Secretary of State, Ruth Hughes, who resigned in May because of a lack of action on her confirmation by the Senate. Your apparent lack of stewardship and rejection of the option to do nothing until further notice will be remembered by Montgomery County voters. So please reconsider. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Ms. Lucetta. Is there anyone else who would like to make any comments today? Any of our citizens, if you would, please. All right, if there are none, we have one, okay, yes. If you identify yourself for the record, please.
Good morning, Zoltan Carl.
And the item that you're gonna talk about?
Not sure if this is the right forum for it, but the intersection at Research Forest and Grogan's Mill Road in the Woodlands.
We'll have that, is that one of our items that has to do with, okay. Then we'll need to do that on miscellaneous, if you would, please.
Absolutely.
But you'll have an opportunity to speak, though.
Thank you
very much, appreciate it. Is there anyone else? All right, if there is no one else, let's move forward to the county clerk. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes from October 12th?
Move.
Second?
Second.
All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. All right, we have the consent agenda. Do I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, or are there any modifications?
I move.
All right, if there are no modifications, we have a motion to approve the consent agenda. Is there is a motion and a second. All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. All right, then let's move over to our open agenda, where we are going to discuss and, at the discretion of this court, take action on the following items. Purchasing, number 11. Gilbert.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is consider and approve resolution approving financing terms, lease agreement, and associated documents with Truist Bank, the amount of $8,131,106 pertaining to the procurement of election equipment previously approved by Commissioner's Court on 9/14/2021. Authorize purchasing agent, county auditor, and other applicable departments to execute and complete all necessary formalities to facilitate the same. Approve payment of a document fee of $3,500 related to this item and to charge to Department 3210.
All right. Do we have a motion to approve?
I move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion. Is there any discussion on this?
Do you have any concerns with this voting system or those who...
Your microphone.
Do you guys have any concerns with the voting equipment that's being purchased, such as addressed by folks here?
This piece is the financing of that equipment. The equipment's already been approved. I don't have any concerns. I looked at it. I looked at the two that were approved by the Secretary of State. I have no...
Susie, you have any concerns? I'm sorry?
The topic has been brought up about a system that is not approved by the true Secretary of the State. Jason, would you care to comment on some of this stuff for us, please? You spent a lot of time in it. Identify yourself, if you would, please.
Good morning, Judge Commissioners. Jason Millsaps, the judge's office. The HART Verity 2.0 system, or 2.5 system, that has already been approved in September by this court, was approved by the Secretary of State's office and the AG's office as required by state law to appoint individuals with expertise in elections equipment and voter irregularities and things like that. They reviewed that equipment in person and examined it, went through the equipment, and followed the checklist that they're required to do to certify that equipment. That happened in January of this year. The federal elections agency that certified the equipment for use is not contingent on Texas. We don't follow that procedure. If the Secretary of State does not approve a machine that the feds have approved, then we cannot use that in Texas. There's only two types of companies in the state that we can use. machines from, and not every one of their machines in their catalog are allowed to be used in Texas. This particular system replaces the current electric voting system, and it has an additional paper backup element to it that is not a hackable portion of that. It is verifiable by not only the voter, but something that we can look back into later to do a recall, a recount, or any type of audit that may be required of that election. We'll actually have a physical hard piece of paper with that casted ballot in a secured box. So as Susie said, she has no issues with the equipment. I've done extensive research on it. I've talked to folks from other states. I've talked to elections security analysts and stuff for the Republican Party and the Democrat Party, and neither side has had any issues with this particular machine. It is not widely used in Texas yet, as it was just approved earlier this year.
And so this machine will basically give us more peace of mind and more safety when it comes to voting than what we're using today.
Absolutely. So you brought this up right after the November election in 2020, not having some type of paper trail. This machine accomplishes that, and it's actually now required under state law. We're actually ahead of the curve because by 2026, systems are going to have to switch to this paper audit backup system. You would vote. You would cast your ballot. It would print that ballot out on paper. You could then reconfirm, and then you would stick that ballot in the tabulator where it would be stored after it's counted. If you skip that step, it's not a counted ballot. We don't count the election results off of the machine count. It's off the paper count. And so,
if there's a discrepancy between the two, is that investigated before results are released?
I'm assuming there's particular procedures that would allow for Susie and her team to find that. And another thing is all these machines are required to be tested before going out for the voters to use with the ballot that we're using for that election as well. So there's already tests in place and securities in place. The word hackable was used. Machines can't be hacked if they don't have connections to the Internet. This does not have a wireless connection to the Internet. It also does not have a hard connection to the Internet. It cannot be hacked. Can it be manipulated? Yes, if someone has physical access of the machine and wants to do harm to the machine or do something like that, sure. But there's check systems in place to prevent unlimited access by one person to these machines. They have to have multiple people around, and doing so is a crime. The state of Texas has made some of these things extreme penalty crimes, and they prosecute those things. So as far as hacking goes, these machines are not hackable in the sense that you would think of through a computer.
So the tally is taken off of the actual paper ballot?
Absolutely, yes, and the tabulator that counts them. Yes, sir.
So if you don't turn that in,
correct. And as Susie said earlier this year when asked that question, she said we will have to be training our elections workers and our precinct judges to look for that and make sure voters aren't leaving with that actual hard ballot. That is not your receipt to take home with you. That is your ballot that until it's in that machine and in that lockbox, it's not counted. So they'll be working through that process to develop education pieces and tools for those workers.
There's one tabulator for each machine?
I believe there's a tabulator for the string. So,
So yep. You'll walk down?
Correct.
You're going to have somebody at each of the tabulators in making sure that people don't leave with that paper.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's an extra step that we currently don't have, but it's a secured step that, we would be able to always have something tangible to go back and count manually or run it back through a tabulator to verify results. So.
And these machines that we use now, Susie, how old are they again? And I know you're not an expert in computers, but Bobby is over there. And Bobby, could you come up here real quick? From your perspective I'm going to proclaim you to be an expert in computers. Agree?
I agree.
Okay. And and being an expert in computers, I would think that using a machine that is 16 years old versus using a machine that is brand new, that the likelihood of there being a way to manipulate this machine that is new is going to be much lower than something that was 16 years, previously. A computer that's 16 years old is much easier to hack or to manipulate than one that is brand new, right?
That's correct. And the single most important thing to understand about these units now is that they're air-gapped, meaning Jason touched this. They're not touching anything. Yeah, they're self-contained. They are programmed, they are checked, and then they have no connection to anything whatsoever except the other machines on that, in that room.
Yeah, on the screen.
And so they can't. I mean, they literally can't be hacked.
So you're comfortable with that statement? These cannot be hacked. These are much safer than the computer, than the machines we're using now. And we have an additional safeguard in place with a paper ballot, which every citizen that I've talked to has asked us to procure.
Yeah.
They can't be hacked without somebody seeing it happen. Let me say that. So.
Say that again. They can't be hacked. What?
They can't be hacked without somebody seeing it happen. You can't hack it from across the street with a cell phone.
And
you would have to be standing there, touching it, doing things to it.
And the reason you can't is because it does not have a modem. Is that correct?
They're air-gapped, correct.
Right. Communication.
And they are kept in a secure location at all times.
That's correct.
Before and after the vote.
So the issue of forensic audit, let's just say a year from now, after we get through, or 2 years from now, somebody says, we need to do a forensic audit.
Well, to speak to that, a forensic audit conducted on the November 2020 election from the state of Texas, I believe there's only one county in Texas that currently uses the Hart Verity system, and it's the 2.0, not the 2.5, and that's Tarrant County. Tarrant County bought those machines after the 2018 election cycle, where they had some voter irregularity issues, and they moved forward with the newer technology with the paper ballot. And as far as I know, they have not had any suspected issues from the 2020 election. They are one of the four counties that the Secretary of State's office announced that they were auditing, but not because of irregularities. They were grabbing large population centers, and Tarrant County is one of the last large metropolitan areas that's still a Republican-based county. So they added that to the list. They grabbed a blue county and a red county from the list, and then the two counties they suspected issues in, which were Bexar and Harris County. And so those four counties, those audits are not necessarily a forensic audit. They're only going back and verifying that they did what they're required by current law to do in safeguarding and testing the equipment prior to testing the sample ballot or the ballot itself and the tabulated result of that before it went out for the public. And then did they follow the procedures at the end of the election for tabulation, counting, and reporting? They're not actually going back to verify if the result that was reported was the result that was actually collected on that election. And that would be what would be considered a forensic audit. So it's not a forensic audit in the sense of that. It's just an audit of verifying procedures were followed.
But the newer machines, unless I'm mistaken, the newer machines, you would have the paper ballot as well as the ticker tape coming out of the machine itself that could be forensically analyzed to prove that that what was submitted is what was done.
Right.
So the research that y'all have done and the Susie and all of everyone has done, these are probably the most secure at this time is voting machine that's out there. Is that correct?
I've been involved in elections since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And the Hart system we currently have has been considered the cream of the crop for election security. And elections integrity experts have said that repeatedly. You know, we'd be blessed to have that system. You'd consider yourself in Montgomery County lucky. And that's not just in Texas. I've been in other states and worked elections. This new system takes what we already have in security with the current system and adds an extra layer in there, which is what Commissioner Nowak brought up last November, which is the paper element
paper.
Where we can,
yeah.
You can't manipulate paper if someone has the ability to look at it before it gets locked away. So it's there and locked in storage until such time as it's needed to be recalled or a court order has us access that box to count it.
All right. Is there any more discussion?
Right.
One thing I'd had calls about from, and maybe they testified here in court to be able to take a printout home with you.
Yep.
It's my understanding from Ms. Harvey, I believe that's illegal.
It is
to be
illegal
able to do that. Yes. So the next best thing is to have.
Correct.
So there's no way for any manipulation. I'm very comfortable
with
a hard copy.
Three chances to review your ballot before it's officially counted. You select your selections on the screen, and this time it's a touch screen as compared to the wheel dial that we're currently using today at the elections going on right now. And then at the end, you'll be able to review your ballot on the screen to confirm your selections are correct and make any changes at that time. And then you would print your ballot. It would be a blank piece of paper that you're given first to feed into the machine. It would print your secured ballot. It does not include any identifiable markings on it where it can be linked back to you, individual voter. But it prints your ballot to review your selections again now on paper. And then if all is well, you would feed it into the tabulator. It'd be counted. If any time during that step there's an issue, you would alert one of the elections officers, and they would assist you with correcting whatever needs to be corrected.
Thank you very much.
I'm good.
Thank you. Guys, very thorough.
Thank you.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all very much. All right, Amanda, let's move on to the budget.
Good morning, Commissioners, judges. This morning, I'm going to discuss the my three items. I have one PowerPoint that's kind of, but I will take the motions separately. So let me open that up real quick. Okay, just as a reminder, the Capital Improvement Fund and the Vehicle and Equipment Capital Plan, all of these are funded already. You guys have already made a motion for an amendment in a prior commissioner's court to move $15 million into this fund. So you're not, we're not looking for a funding source today. This is just how you're going to allocate the projects. Okay? The first one is the Motorola upgrade. This is the second year of our two-year project. This is for equipment and service for the IT department. This Motorola upgrade is a little over $2 million, $2,041,000. The second one is the countywide roof project. This is an annual maintenance of our roofs in our county buildings. This is an ongoing project, so it doesn't really have an end date until building maintenance goes through and determines which roofs are going to be taken care of each year. This year, the funds are targeted for the Sheriff's Office main building, and that's $1 million. The next project is our Enterprise Resource Planning, our ERP. This is covers the Infor, Oracle, Inspect2Go, and MHC products. This is ongoing. This year, this is going to hit Phase 3 talent acquisition, the Phase 4 budget module, and then ongoing maintenance. For FY 2022, we have targeted $957,000 for that project. For the Sheriff AC projects, this is another ongoing project. This is for an annual replacement of air conditionings in the Sheriff's Office jail, and that's $80,000. The next one is the final year of the forensics project. This is $1 million dedicated to that project. That's to finish out any construction and also towards furniture and equipment related to the forensic center. We do expect to open that up in spring 2022. The next one is going to be, it was discussed a lot during budget workshop, was the DA IT data repository project. This affects all law enforcement, not just the county, but also law enforcement departments within the county, City of Conroe, Shenandoah PD, City of Willis, those types. This allows all the body cameras, dash cameras, and other media to be in a single area where multiple secured parties have access to that data. It is a multi-year subscription project. And this year, one is estimated to be $475,000.
Are the any of the other entities that are participating in this financially contributing?
At this point, we don't have any interlocal agreements with those. I know IT and the DA's office was considering doing those, so we can touch base with them and make it.
Needs to happen.
Okay.
So we, like next court, let's have an agenda item to discuss getting something in place where they're going to pay to participate in it.
Sounds good.
Do you have any idea, Commissioner, how much it would relieve that $475,000? How much it would be? You have any idea at all?
No, we'd have to kind of look at it. But, as we've discussed before, we need to get to the point to where we have some sort of an official agreement with these cities for services that we provide, especially the larger ones.
Okay.
The next one is CP0033. That's the Phillips House project, also known as the White House. This is basically removing that house. It does have some issues, and so that's regarding it's a one-year project, and we've targeted $350,000. It's possible that it's not going to take that much money. We haven't gotten any quotes or anything yet, but that's how much we've allocated in the CIP plan.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
That taking into effect doing something with the ground parking lot?
Yes. Tim?
Yes.
Good.
So the amendment that we're looking at is this big one. I'm allocating out $11.5 million worth of projects. I've gone over all of the ones that are from the 957-806 down. The remaining ones to discuss is the $1.4 million to each commissioner's office for their parks, or Commissioner Nowak has his Ed Chance project. We had a lot of discussion during budget workshop on this, and I've allocated $1.4 million to each commissioner for their projects. Now, that means that also in FY23, there will need to be a significant contribution also to CIP to keep up with these projects, because this doesn't even begin to be really start those projects. So keep that in mind. I am willing to have any discussion if there is, because I know Commissioner Nowak, you had a little bit of uneasiness.
Well, during the budget hearings, we had a lot of conversations about the Ed Chance Annex and about being able to put that on the market to sell it and to construct a new building. We had allocated $7 million during the budget hearings to that project. Now that seems to have disappeared, so I'm not really sure how that happened. So if you could explain, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. So I did have two commissioners reach out to me personally regarding whenever they found out that their projects were not in the FY2022 budget, that they wanted those to be pushed up to the FY2022 budget. Well, at that point, I had $15 million in funds, but I had close to $30 million in projects, and so it wasn't really going to work that way. So what I thought was it'd be better if, you know, we divided it up equally. Each commissioner got $1.4 million. They could target that toward whichever projects that they want, knowing that that doesn't satisfy any of your needs, right? I understand that, and that's why I think we are going to need to have, and we're going to bring that up in the future, how much we expect to need in 2023 CIP, in 2024, to kind of fulfill the rest of those needs. But Commissioner, I understand that there was a difference.
Yeah, and I don't think that it makes a lot of sense to just allocate funding and not fulfill a particular need or purpose when there was some sort of a collective agreement during the budget hearings for this to happen. We know that we have an outdated, antiquated facility that needs to be upgraded, just like most people's facilities have been upgraded that sit up here. And, I'm asking for that money to come for this project, and once we sell the annex, get this completed. Unlike other areas, we actually have a facility that we'd be putting on the market and selling, so that we'll be bringing money back to the county as well. So I'd really like to keep that in place for this budget year, so we can take care of this critical
doing
need.
What you've done, none of us can get a project done, because if we were needing more money than what
doling it out doesn't help much.
Yeah, because nobody gets to move forward, and even in 22, because we don't have the funds to do our project. So we probably should discuss that, I think.
Like I said, I can't tell you how quickly we can get this done. As soon as November gets here, we'd like to move forward with doing something on the Ed Chance Annex. The value of that building alone, I don't really want to discuss up here. I don't think that's a good idea, but I can just say that when you own property in Town Center in the Woodlands, it's a valuable piece of property, and we'll be able to bring that back.
I'll say this, Amanda. I was not counting on that $1.4 million this year. I wasn't planning on using it. I don't have plans right now to do that. So my 1.4 can go back to where it was.
Thank you.
And precinct 4, the 1.4 will help us get started to where we want to be. Again, it's certainly not the amount of money that we need to finish the project, but we don't expect it's going to take probably a couple of years, or maybe even 3 years, to complete the improvements that we want to make over there. So it will work for us in precinct 4. So, but
funds. Discussed with y'all, because my project was a 23. I mean, we were thinking about 22, but we can wait. So I don't know. My money's where it would apply best for you guys. I don't know.
Well, that's generous of you. I'm comfortable with what we have there before we can get started and get something rolling, if we can do something to help Commissioner Nowak here.
So would we prefer to send the other $2.8 million over to Commissioner Nowak's Ed Chance project?
Get that started.
Are you saying yours as well, Commissioner?
Yeah, I think that'll help
Walker.
Get it going. For
I'm
sure.
Sorry?
No, you're saying to take your monies and put them over to the commissioner's project?
Yes.
So that would be, if you're giving them 1.4, that would be 4.2 towards.
I don't know what the Commissioner Metz.
He's going to keep his.
He's hanging on to his.
He said that that would, that portion of you that'll guys being generous and putting that down will help him get started, and that will help us get started.
So that'll give, the modification would be, that would give you 4.2 towards your project.
That would get us started, I believe, so.
Okay.
And us as well.
So the motion that I will need you guys to make on this one is, and we don't need to defer it because you, is to authorize budget office to effectuate a budget amendment to fund the 7 previous projects stated in the PowerPoint, along with $1,420,000 to Commissioner Metz's project, and then $4,260,000 to Commissioner Nowak's Ed Chance project.
Do we have a motion?
Move. Is there a second?
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
The second part is, kind of talked about this a little bit during budget workshop, is establishing a capital and vehicle and equipment capital improvement project. This is basically, it still shares the same fund with the CIP, but it's stored in a different project. And so what this will allow us to do is to kind of look ahead on our vehicle and equipment purchases, and instead of just looking at 1 year. So the goal is in the future is to be able to, just like the CIP, kind of look at a long-term plan, see what we need for vehicle replacements. And so this is the first year of kind of building that plan. The first one, we call it, is VP001, and this is for vehicle purchase. This project will fund vehicles not already purchased in the FY 2022 budget. The departments included in this vehicle purchase is the constables, the sheriff's office, and the fire marshal. The vehicle purchases will be coordinated with purchasing, and if a replacement vehicle is purchased, then we are asking the departments to either turn in that vehicle for auction or to trade that vehicle in. For this year, we're expecting 27 Tahoes, some civilian and law enforcement SO vehicles, so detective vehicles. They have some other specialized units and a fire marshal truck. All those vehicles come up to $1.5 million, so $1,560,450.
And that takes into account everything that was approved during the budget hearing?
Yes. So, yes, Commissioner, yeah. That's new positions, replacement vehicles. A lot of the replacements for the constables, we did pre-fund those
vehicles.
Can you
go back to that screen? Go back to the previous screen?
A lot of those vehicles for the constables, we did go ahead and pre-fund. But the new positions, obviously, we didn't pre-fund those. And so the new positions are included in that number as well as quite a few of replacements for sheriff's office.
Do we have any idea when we would receive these vehicles?
Yeah, so that's a good question. We are still able to bid our bid with the sheriff's office. It's part of a buy board. We are still able to order through those through October 31st. So we are still able to order. Now, it is going to still be not a quick turnaround, but we do are expecting anywhere from 180 days plus. So,
and is this, I mean, we still have vehicles from last budget that we have not received, right?
Yes. The list is dwindling. We got an update yesterday. I can grab my laptop, but if Gilbert has it right there.
So you're saying we still got vehicles from the last budget we haven't received yet?
Yeah, there's some vehicles that we purchased in the FY21 budget at the beginning. So we purchased those, or we placed the order October 2020, that they're slowly starting to finally come in. We've gotten in some of them, most of them, but not all of them. And so there is, I don't know.
Gilbert, do you know what the numbers are on that?
While he's looking, these 27 Tahoes for the Sheriff's Department, are any of those for the Woodlands Township contract, or are those all county?
The Woodlands contract has already been ordered, my understanding.
Right. So okay, I just want to make sure they're here from last year's budget?
We bought those from Parkway.
In the summer.
But did they fund vehicles for the 2022 budget year, the township?
I haven't heard, Commissioner, at this point. So vehicles.
Does anybody know?
I don't.
Not sure. So we don't know if they bought vehicles for 2022.
Todd's here. Todd, do you? Okay.
Don't think so.
Thank you.
Okay.
Normally, they normally add in vehicles towards the year. So we don't normally set a budget with the township on that. I don't know if they set it as part of their budget process, but we definitely don't on our end.
Everything that we
order is here.
From Buckaloo?
So everything is here from last year now.
Okay.
So we're... So
we got an update yesterday, yeah.
All right. It did take a year to get it, but...
Well, we got it.
It's here now.
That's, that was, I think, what you wanted
yeah,
to know.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure, kind of see where we stood.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, good.
Well, good work staying on top of it.
So then it's equipment related to those vehicles. Now, the equipment, we did pre-fund the 2021 the 2022 vehicles, but we did not pre-fund the equipment. So this equipment includes new positions, replacements for 21 or 22, and a few replacements that were purchased and wrecked vehicles and that sort of thing. So this is 50, this is, includes light bars, graphics, if necessary, a dash camera, console adjustments. We expect 55 vehicles plus other equipment for some specialty units. That amount to be $1,093,905. The next one, also part of the EP-001, is the airport runway equipment. That's the taxiway cleaning machine. It's $171,650, and we will have future savings in contract services from this. So the operating budget in the future may decrease to, with this purchase. The next one is BP-001. That's the capital outlay for books at the library. If you remember, the book purchase for the library is normally in their operational funds. We took out all of the capital as part of the FY 2022 budget process. Books are considered capital equipment according to accounting standards. And so this year, $347,252 is based on previous orders along with the growth. So this is a number that we calculated as part of the budget office. When we look at during the budget process for budget workshop, this would have been the number we would have recommended in their budget. Instead of taking it out, we took it out of their operating, and so we're asking you guys to fund it here in the capital improvement plan.
Have they finished reading all the other books we bought?
they did use their funds last year, Commissioner Nowak. We were watching that, and they did use the funds.
No, it's great.
EP-002, this is for the elections project. You know, with the funding of the new voting equipment, there is additional furniture, carts, equipment, and supplies that go with that that we did not feel comfortable funding as part of the financing. So this is the total request. It's been a negotiating thing on that, but the request was about $700,857, and the funding and this vehicle equipment plan is $240,000.
Now, before you move forward on that, because what we're going to see on the agenda coming up under elections is of $341,000. So right now you've got $240,000 that you're showing. Is there anything anywhere where we can adjust to pick up that extra $101,400 for elections so that when we get to item A, it'll be done?
Yeah, so the capital improvement fund did not have that additional money available. We could look at funding it out of, there's not a lot of money in contingency. I have to pull that number out of contingency, but
in this
capital improvement fund here, no, there is not
okay,
there's not really any too much
wiggle room. But the 240 is there. Okay, very good.
So on this one, I do need a motion to authorize the budget to effectuate a budget amendment to fund the 5 previous vehicle and equipment projects funding to come from capital improvement fund balance.
Do we have a motion to that effect?
Yeah, but I want to stick with what the judge was asking. There's got to be a way to find another $100,000 or so to take care of the rest of the needs for elections. You can't have machines and not have the necessary equipment to run them or supplies to run them.
If you look down on item A under elections, that ask is going to be $341,400. Well, we have $240,000. In capital.
That's what
right
I was asking,
now
if they have another 100,000.
Yeah, so for another 100,000 something somewhere to put that together. Otherwise it comes out of contingency or fund balance or whatever, because we've got to have it.
Is that the total number? What they're saying?
It's a little over 100. 40. Yeah, it's a little over 100,000 that's needed.
That's needed.
Yes.
That's needed.
When all this said and done, it's a little over 100 grand.
Well, you still have caddies that we're putting bids out on, which is
roll on to
some $350,000, probably something like that. But that's, but for this right here to move forward on these supplies, we're $101,400 short.
And I put up $25,000 if y'all wanted to.
I can do that.
Or if you want to find it somewhere else, that's fine with me, too.
Why don't I take it out of the money I gave to the commissioner?
We already spent that. It's gone. Evan wrote the check over.
You spent his. You didn't spend mine. I'll take it.
We're going to have to come up with some more money somewhere, Amanda, by the time you get through doing all you're fixing to do, I'm telling you. $101,000, whatever you're talking about. We're going to end up with more.
It's going to be more than that, yes.
Well, yeah, you've got the total. It was sevens when you figure the caddies in. But at this point, for this object, this item on 14A.
I think we're getting a credit for that. It was already.
If you, please. For the record, please.
The commissioner had said that, can we sell the old machines? We actually are getting a credit for those machines,
right,
against
the trade-in value.
Yeah.
Commissioner, I'm looking right now out of the $15 million, how much was total allocated, so give me 1 second.
And we could probably take it out of the $375,000 White House project for now, because the first thing we'll do is get that either moved or torn down. That's not going to cost that much. And then we can figure out the parking. Because really, between all of us, we should be able to get a parking lot built.
What is the price on the tear down on that? You have not? Well, if we all...
I think you can take it out of that and make it...
Okay.
That would be my suggestion.
Do we have to change take it out of the White House project? Previous motion, Amy, in order to do that?
Yeah, so what we would do is...
As long as we all four agree to...
Get that parking lot built,
for
sure.
Get that parking lot built.
Totally agree.
Yeah, you would have to fix your...
For 25, bro.
Amy. You'd have to fix the motion from prior.
That's what?
Okay, then I would move to withdraw the previous motion.
You've voted on it.
Or just to have another amendment. So they approved that.
Yeah.
So now we're going to have a subsequent amendment. And we're going to take that money, and you're going to authorize whatever the authorization is you need.
Okay. So we're going to...
A motion that we authorize the budget officer to make an amendment in an amount not to exceed $110,000 to cover the difference between what is in the capital improvement plan for the election supplies for the new machines based on the $300,000 bid or estimate for those needed
for supplies.
What was that amount on the White House?
It was 350.
Say again?
350.
Okay.
Okay, we have a motion on the table, amendment, I guess, to the previous motion. Do we have a
get
second?
That, Amber, did y'all get that?
A second.
You guys get all that for the minutes? Okay. All right, any more discussion? All in favor?
Uh-huh.
Opposed? Motion carries.
All right, one last item. This is discussion on changes to the Montgomery County budget policy. Again, this is just a discussion. This is a dialogue between you guys and the budget officer. We are not making any motions on this item. I will be bringing back a budget policy at the next commissioner's court that will have your recommendations in it. Some discussion points that I have are the first one is the extension or renewal of resolution order regarding elected officials' salary budgets. If you guys recall, you guys did a resolution order that allowed elected officials, if they had it in their budget, a salary variance, to give that salary variance up to 5% to an employee. So if you had a vacancy and you wanted to give somebody else a raise in their department, that elected official could take that money, move it from one position to the other, and then give the employee a raise for up to 5%. This would be if they were taking on additional duties, if maybe they hadn't been recognized before. At prior point, this was because we hadn't had a COLA in a couple of years. And so I wanted to see if what kind of the flavor of the court was, if they wanted to continue this or if we wanted to let it. It did expire September 30th. I have one elected official that has requested this sort of change. And I've told that elected official that, the resolution order has expired and that I would be coming to you guys to get some guidance on whether you wanted to extend that resolution order or if we were okay with it being expired or modifying the resolution order.
What do you recommend concerning that? Now it's 5% right now, correct?
It's 5% right now, right. I don't think that the 5%, if you're going to continue the resolution order, if that's something that you guys want to choose to do, I think the 5% is too high, especially with just giving the COLA that we gave, and along with there was a lot of departments that, you know, may have gotten some upgrades. So if you are considering doing that, I would recommend that you lower that 5% down, anywhere from 1.5% to 3%. Totally up to you guys, but the resolution order was used by quite a few departments, okay? It was specifically also used for departments that they had really no change in the position. It was just kind of bumping those positions up a little bit. That's where we saw most of the elected officials using it.
And also there's our salary schedules out of whack, and then we have the whole we need to equalize pay. But it gives elected officials the ability to pay people who are assuming additional duties within their departments without coming to you every single time. We just need to know whether you want to modify the resolution in order, whether you think it worked well over this past year, or whether you want them coming back to court for those raises when they want to provide them. I think most of you said, well, if they have the money in their budget and this person's now doing that, or they have a long-time tenured employee who has left, we're replacing them with someone who isn't as new, and one of the other people are stepping up to assume those duties, they should be compensated. It allows elected officials to kind of compensate their employees appropriately without coming to court every time.
Allowing the elected officials the flexibility, I mean, it makes sense. I like that. The issue, though, is we need somehow to these elected officials that, you know, they see that, you know, that Joey raises, you know, Bob in his office, and then all of a sudden, you know, people complain that Bob makes more than Joe, and Joe's been here 5 years, and Bob's been here too. I don't like that. I don't want to get in the middle of that type of drama, and that's what we thought we were ending by granting this, you know, authority. I'm really interested, Doty, you're going to be bringing us a salary program soon, an updated version of that, right? When do you think you'll be able to have that in place?
I'm not sure. We put the RFP out.
You speak into the microphone, Doty.
Sorry. Purchasing's going to put the RFP out this week or next week, and it'll take probably a couple of months for us to get that settled.
Would the court be willing to suspend this until we receive this new salary schedule from HR? And if a department head or elected official feels like they can't wait, then they just put it on the agenda and come ask in court.
How long are we? I don't have a problem with that. It affects you guys and how you guys and sheriff and others that are operating.
You know, that way, because we don't want to get it more out of whack, you know.
Right.
It just makes it harder. And that way, you know, if somebody has an issue, they can bring it to us, look at it at a one-off. But until we get the new...
The elected official doesn't have to go up the full 5%, do they? Isn't that a max?
It's up to...
We didn't have... Like, there are some elected officials that did not go up to the full 5%. Most of them, I will say, did, but not all of them. Some of them just, you know, bumped people up a dollar or, you know, 50 cents or a quarter, just depending on what the hourly rate was.
I think the 5% is too much. I think it ought to be 3%, but I also think we ought to look at department heads.
Right. Department heads are not covered.
Huh?
Department heads are not covered under this resolution order, and if you'd like to include them, we can do that as well.
Just think, if we've got them in place and they're still in place and we're confident that they're still in place, they ought to be able to do the same thing. I really do.
I would have, Commissioner, with all due respect, I appreciate what you're saying, and I think there are benefits to that. But I think that at the end of the day, the way, just logistically and how we work as a, we go to one person, go to another person. I mean, all the department heads work for all of us. It can be difficult at times. Now you're talking about just arbitrarily giving them the ability to raise at will. I'm not ready to go there.
No, and I would like to see us come back with these new salary schedules and the classifications of individuals.
So whatever they do, if the department head wants to give somebody a raise, it's got to come through here. I mean, they can do it, but we still got to approve it. If we don't want to approve, we don't approve.
But not, no, we're saying we give them the ability to do it without our
approval. Without approval.
That's how we do the elected officials.
If you misunderstood that, forgive me. Because we have the ability to automatically give that 5% without approval, correct? So at the end of the day, to give that to the others as well would fall under the same deal as what the commissioners are doing.
I still think that's something we need to look at.
How long has this been in effect?
1 year. Yeah, it was.
Oh, so it's only been 1 year?
Yeah, we drafted a resolution order that came to court a year ago to allow elected officials to modify their budgets. And it was for a lot of the reasons that Amanda described. The court had set, I'll just pick on BD because he's my boss, BD's budget during budget and said this is how much he has for salary. And if someone were to leave, they would let them adjust those. So if another lawyer was stepping in and taking over more responsibilities, he could adjust those without bringing those to court. And it didn't really affect. It used to be you would see on the agenda, closed position, open position, adjust this position. This does not affect the budget. And what we said was, we have a lot of these. We don't need these to come to court for elected officials. And if I put a resolution in order, said, as long as it's not over 5%, we can do that. Or we want to see what happens. And so we made it for a limited time. We said, for one budget year, let's see if this works.
And it did not allow the elected officials to give promotions necessarily, right? So you couldn't just say, okay, well, now you're an attorney two, but you've been doing attorney three work. Okay, now we're going to promote you to an attorney three. It doesn't allow that either.
To move it over to department heads is every one of these elected officials represents the people. They're voted in by the people. They're accountable to those dollars. We turn that over to a department head. They are not elected. They're not accountable to the people. And in the same sense, they're just not. So I think for us as elected officials,
everybody that works for Montgomery County is accountable to the people.
Of course, but you're correct. We're all accountable in the sense that we serve the people, but we all also who are elected, we've got to be supported. We run the campaigns. We put out the signs. We send the mailings. We go through forums. We do this every 2 years, every 4 years. And the people then, when we get elected, I agree with where
you're coming from, not necessarily how you're describing it. It's all that
stuff that makes us accountable to the people.
I understand. I'm just saying I think
we represent the people.
The department heads work for us. We set the policy. Elected officials don't work for us. That, to me, is the difference. Elected officials have their own sphere of authority. It's spelled out either in statute and constitution. So once we give them a budget, they can operate that budget kind of how they want to. It's not the same for a department head, in my opinion.
Well, that's all you're saying. Exactly.
A couple of things. I still think we should just suspend this until we get the salary guidelines back in place and agree on those. And the other thing we need to consider when we do look at this is what Commissioner Riley was saying, do department heads fit in? And then we need to make sure we restrict it to only one time a year.
And we do that, Commissioner.
Needs to make sure it's spelled out that way, because I know there's been conversations.
Yeah, cool. Yep.
All right. So my motion would be
one time a year for the whole department?
One person can only get bumped once a year.
Right. We don't need a motion to suspend.
Well, we do need to, just so it's clear. I would like to make the motion to do that.
It expired.
Well, it's over. But they want to use it anyway.
We don't have to have a motion, then let's defer this until
we
get the information.
Don't defer yet. Still need other ideas.
Yeah.
Huh? Okay, don't defer yet, Judge, please, because I have other items on the
budget. No, not the whole thing, that one element.
Yes.
Yeah, just one element.
So it is then expired, it can't be used. If somebody has an extreme need, they can bring it to the court until we get this back in. It's under RFP now.
I think that's reasonable, don't you think? Absolutely.
Is that cool? Okay. Yeah. All right. The next discussion point is the carryover deadline. You guys deferred this last commissioner's court, but the carryover deadline I was recommending is October 18th. At this point, of course, that deadline's passed, but I would like to see that you guys are okay with, as of today, if we do not get any more carryovers by 10:35 a.m., I would like to not see any of those be included in our carryover request. So basically the carryover deadline, set it as of today, if you guys are okay with that.
Well, we approve those anyway, right? I mean, they bring them, they...
We compile the request, and then we bring it to you guys. And so the compiled, we'd like to have that cutoff date of today for the compiled request so that departments don't continue asking.
Are you getting a lot?
Yes.
What have we done in the past?
Yes. Budgeted for?
More than we have in, since I've been in Montgomery County.
Why? I mean, what's...
A lot of it we're seeing is training and travel dollars. Some of it we're seeing that equipment costs have gone up a little bit, contract increases. I know some elected officials had contract increases that they weren't expecting, and so that they requested some carryover money to cover those increased contracts.
What was the previous deadline?
Previous deadline was October. Well, the budget policy, the last budget policy, I believe it said October 15th.
You're extending it 3 days.
Yeah, I'm actually, well, because the item got deferred, I'm asking it to be today, October 26th.
It's, gentlemen, comments?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
We need to make
you're
a
lot right now. You're still getting,
Amy, we did get some at the end of last week.
Amy, you'll tell us what we need to make
so
motions
I think she's going to bring all of these back. Right now,
yeah.
We don't need any action on any of these. She's going to come back at the next court and have... a kind of a memorialization of everything that is discussed here today. So you don't actually have to make any motions on these. She's just wanting some direction from you for the next court.
She wants to say 10:35 today.
She's wanting you to say, she's wanting you to say,
say
this is how it is.
After
yes.
Heard this.
She's wanting,
so
yes,
I think
she's wanting
her
to
point
close.
Is she doesn't want any more.
I know that.
I think she wants to close the door on request for carryovers.
I know, but if she can wait till 10:35, she can wait till noon.
Okay, that's fine.
High noon.
Okay.
The toll road.
The next one is vacancy savings. We've talked about this a little bit before. In the vacancy savings, I would like to see and see what your comments are about the benefits associated with those vacancies be sent to the self-insurance fund. So I'd like to incorporate that into the policy, that the benefits piece of vacancies goes directly into the self-insurance fund versus previously we had it going to contingency.
Yeah, no, that's perfect.
Yeah.
And are there any changes on any of the departments that we allow to use their vacancy savings? Like, do you remember?
Who gets to use them right now?
So previously, the sheriff's office could use their vacancy savings for to create positions. That's what happened last year. And this year.
But I thought, is that something we control? Like we said, he gets 12 positions, or is it unlimited? How does it work?
Yeah, so last year he gave us a list. We had a target vacancy number that we expected to get. We were very close to that target number, so we did a really good on that part of it. Now, remember the sheriff's office, we already build a little bit of vacancy savings into his budget, right? Because we know he's not going to have a 100% fill rate. So anything he gets above our targeted rate, previously it was his to use either for new positions or equipment or whatever he might need. Again, the constables, it wasn't exactly the same. The constables, we collected it at a quarterly time, and if they had any requests, we would bring those to court. But, you know, that's really the only. So if you guys want to continue the sheriff's office the way that we have done it in the past where he gets to keep. But, again, I need some direction on the benefits, what you want to do with the sheriff's office, what you want to do with the law enforcement departments.
But you are calculating on the front end some vacancy savings.
For the sheriff's office, yes.
What do you recommend?
Is that working for you, Sheriff, like it is? Or?
This last budget year, I did give you a list this year of jailers for District 4, annex for District
2. And if you guys recall, if he didn't meet that vacancy target, then there was some discussion between two commissioners that they would help fund those positions. So I would recommend doing that. Otherwise, I would recommend letting the sheriff continue his. I mean, he's honestly been doing, I think we have a really great arrangement. The way that we do it, we work really hard.
Working good. Let's leave it alone.
Okay.
Yeah. Constables as well?
Constables, I'll leave it up to, because constables, some of them used the vacancy savings for requests, for salary increases, some for equipment, some for vehicle for equipment. So
what is the sheriff? Only, does he only use his for
last
positions?
Year, I believe he only used it for positions.
Only positions.
So make it the same for the constable then.
I don't have a problem with that at all.
If it's for positions.
Just so you guys recall, if you're a member of vacancy savings, the calculation, they are able to use it for overtime, right? They are able to use it to pay down comp time. So that's not really, you know, we allow the departments to, you don't have to okay that. We look at their carryover, look at their overtime, look at their comp time numbers, recommend, hey, go ahead, you have some vacancies, why don't we go ahead and pay down these comp time? So if you're asking for, if you're saying that they can use their vacancy money for positions, you're allowing them to possibly give promotions, right? So they could, you know, promote people from sergeant to lieutenant. They could do that because that's really what their, most of their money is, you know, law enforcement positions.
So when I think of, like, sheriff, is that what you do? Do you, have you used some of it for upgrades or, yes, okay.
A little bit.
Well, yeah, not much.
Yeah. Not much. Not a lot.
No, I think they should have the same flexibility.
Okay.
Our group.
Who's they?
The constables and the sheriff.
Okay.
What kind of money are we talking about?
Not with the constables, not much.
It just depends. So you would be surprised. A constable position with benefits, you're looking at $75,000, $80,000. Divide that by 26 pay periods. That's about $30,000 a pay period. So it's, they can get, you know, $9,000 to $12,000 keeping a position open for a month and a half, which we don't see a lot of, but there are a couple of constables' offices that do have just the requirements that they have in their constable's office. You do see some of those being a little bit
Chief,
open
what's your thoughts? Chief Fuller? On this matter, as far as...
You precinct, come to the microphone, if you would, please.
Precinct 1.
Chief.
I think it's a good idea, giving us the same authority the sheriff has. We have very few vacancies. Matter of fact, right now, I think we filled all the mental health positions we have one still pending. So our vacancies don't last very long, so there's not a whole lot there to work with. But yes, I think we should have the same authority as the Sheriff's Department has.
Same flexibility with regards to this aspect of the budget.
Okay.
I move.
I would agree.
Okay. The next one is budget amendments involving payroll. Just so you guys know, right now I have the authority if a budget amendment is needed to process payroll, meaning that we need to put some more money in a contract budget, we can go ahead and process that amendment immediately so that we can, you know, get payroll done. I'd like to see that continue, but if you guys like to change that, then that's up to Commissioner's Court.
I'd like to see that continue myself.
All right. Well, I will bring, I do have a couple of dates that I'll be bringing back. So Budget Office will bring back an updated budget policy on November 9th. We'll bring the first round of carryovers also on November 9th. And then we'll bring the second round of carryovers if there's any that we received today, basically on November 16th. And the Budget Office will bring carryovers related to purchase orders. So that's the big one that we work with the auditor's office on. We'll either bring that November 16th or December 8th, just depending on how quickly we're able to get that calculation done. Okay. All right.
Good.
Thank
Excellent.
You. I appreciate
and
your time.
When you come back on the salary issue, will you bring a historical perspective of how much unused salary dollars used to go into contingency versus now get given out as raises during the year, the 5%, you know, because it does have an impact. It's not necessarily an impact on the elected official's budget necessarily, but it does impact our ability to fund things through the attrition process like we used to.
I'll come up with something, Commissioner.
All right.
Thank
Amanda,
you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate all that information. All right. As we move on, emergency management. Jason, proceed.
Good morning again, Judge and Commissioners. Item A is to consider and discuss and approve the proposal from AC Disaster Consulting for the creation of a submission of 6 infrastructure applications for the FY21 FEMA BRIC Infrastructure Community Grant Opportunity. Total awards estimated approximately $112 million. This grant opportunity has a 25% local cost share, also authorizing Darren to sign the agreement with AC consulting, and we would need a funding source to fund the consulting. It's $41,000 is the estimated cost, or not to exceed. A little bit about the BRIC grant. As you recall, last year we brought a grant opportunity for some flood mitigation projects throughout the county, the six projects. That particular grant had some low to moderate income requirements that just unfortunately Montgomery County, we just don't fall in that LMI category to get some of those, and we weren't competitive because of the scoring model. The BRIC grant does not score based on low to moderate income, so these projects have a much better chance of being awarded because they're awarded based on met needs for flood mitigation versus looking at targeted populations. The funding or the grant, the local matching share is high, 25%. However, we do have available Senate Bill 7 grant funds that will cover 75% of that 25% that we could go out for.
Be clear, we're not looking for $112 million for Montgomery County, are we? Or is that enough?
If we want to do all six of those projects, the cost on that's $112 million.
And we would need 25% of 112.
That. Correct. But if awarded the BRIC, so the plan is if awarded the BRIC from the application you would authorize today or not, if we win that award, we would immediately go out for a grant with SB 7. That passed in the 86th legislative session. That was a $1.5 billion rainy day fund tap that the state put forward to help offset the cost share that the local governments have to endure. We're allowed to apply for up to 75% of our local cost share. So our cost, how does that factor out? We would be paying a quarter of a quarter.
Do you have the list of the six projects?
I do, actually.
And the price?
Are we guaranteed 100% we're going to get 75% of that money back?
Not necessarily, but you know, we feel very more competitive now than we were with the LMI element. On top of that, that's another reason why the cost of going out with the consultant is lower. We've already done a lot of this work because this is repeating the application essentially for those projects.
And this is where one of the projects is Sawdust Bridge.
That is correct. So the six I don't have them broken down by cost, but the six projects is the Sanderson Watershed and Tributary Barrier Flood Mitigation. That's an East County project. Sanderson Watershed and Tributary Barrier Flood Mitigation on Lake Creek. Sanderson Watershed and Tributary Barrier Flood Mitigation in West County. So it's West County and Lake Creek connect. Or excuse me, not West County, Lake Creek, but West Lake Creek and the West Fork.
Right.
Connect. Stewart Creek Mitigation Project, the Roman Forest Bridge Elevation Project, and then the Sawdust Bridge Elevation Project.
Good.
So, off of memory, I believe the Sawdust Bridge Project is the highest of the six, followed by the Roman Forest Bridge, and then each of the river tributary things are pretty equal.
About all those percentages that you named, what kind of money would we have to come up if we got the 75% match and we got what are we talking about?
7 million.
Give me 1 second.
$7 million. Yeah, if you take the 25% of the total, which is 28, and divide that by 4, 25% of the 75, it leaves it $7 million. And if we don't get it, what happens, Jason?
Well, at any time, the court could reject the grant and not be obligated. So we have the ability, if we don't or if we're not awarded SB 7 funds, to basically say, okay, thank you, but we can't move forward.
Well, or I mean, can you not? I mean, because here's the deal: if we get, you know, nobody, there are other options. I mean, we could fund it through, I mean, a bond issue. There's different ways we could fund this if we needed
Absolutely.
To. And we are constantly being beat up by other entities saying, oh, Montgomery County does nothing on flooding. You're not working on anything. This just shows that Montgomery County has been continuing to work. Instead of running our mouth, we've been sitting behind the scenes working with the right entities to come up with an actual plan instead of sitting around talking about it.
Multiple times the county, even before my time with OEM, Darren and his team, they have been very competitive pushing for these grants and working with FEMA and other entities to get this done. We're just sometimes not as competitive. We don't have the luxury like Harris County of being an LMI-type county with where these projects are. And so, I mean, the Sawdust Bridge alone would not be an LMI project.
You can do it without being a city.
Yeah.
So we're talking a grant for $112 million. We'd have to come up with 25% of that. 25%
is $28 million. Yep.
We would apply to Senate Bill 7 so that our exposure would be $7 million to pick up $112. And if we don't get
That's
it
correct.
Done, what will it cost? That's what the $41,000 is for.
And that's assuming all in. So any one of these six projects could not score and be removed from the brick. So there's a lot of variables in that number. But at 100% all in, we would be on the hook for $7 million.
Rakesh,
figure out awarded. $7 million.
Yeah.
Darren, you did a good job on this. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
For Rakesh, keeping.
Are
there any projects that we feel like may not score? May not.
When I talked to Darren, and Darren can join us if he wants to, he felt very confident based on how BRIC is structured that we're in a much better position on these projects than we were on the previous grant opportunity, which included that LMI element. So we're up against a deadline to get into the BRIC, so I don't want to pressure you guys, but we feel much more confident that this is good. And these projects, they're doing some of this work already further down the watersheds. It only makes sense to allow us to do it upstream as well.
When would we find out? How quickly will it?
It's usually January, February. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And our initial investment's $41,000.
$41,000, yeah, which that would roll into our part of our cost share at some point. So.
What's our contingency balance?
FY 2022 is $53,697.
We do have
all right. Well, we just used 41. Move on contingency.
we do have the disaster fund. We could use it out of the disaster fund for the time being as well.
Until
we're not in hurricane season anymore. So for the next few months, the disaster fund is not going to be a big deal.
I'll make a motion.
Should be $250,000 currently. So
to do it, and the funding source would be out of the disaster fund. I'll make that motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Opposed?
Motion carries. Thank you.
Item B is our ongoing project that we do with buyouts. It's the 2021 FMA grant. We have items, as you approved earlier, 2019 FMA amendment. This is an ongoing thing. We have a very successful buyout program. We just actually had one of the first buyouts related to, I believe it's Hurricane Harvey. So we're ahead of the curve in that regard. This would allow us to continue. We have a list of over 600 properties throughout the county that qualifies for the repetitive or severe repetitive loss. Adding another 40 to the potential buyout.
Is there any way to target these into specific areas or streets or try to encourage? Because the problem when you buy one all over, it's not really solving the problem.
So,
we need to buy a whole street.
So there's a lot of restrictions. So one, you have to be owner-occupied at the time the buyout occurs, and it has to still be insured under the National Flood Insurance Program in order to qualify. Plus, they have to have all the documented expenses and associated loss receipts and what they've done to recover from that and mitigate that damage by fixing it. So there's a lot of, I mean, it's a very slow process, methodical slow process. Our disaster recovery manager does a fantastic job of holding their hand and getting them through this process and getting this documentation so they do qualify. But as I was explaining to the judge this morning, the house next door may flood once, and this house floods five times. This one's not going to qualify just yet under severe and repetitive loss. It hasn't just happened enough, but this one would. And that's why these addresses of targeted homes that are eligible aren't public record. We don't want neighbors fighting over it and causing problems. And that's part of our grant requirements as well. So it's harder to do that, and flooding doesn't happen in a cluster sometimes. It does in some cases. I believe they're on this particular group of these 40, there are a few clusters where houses are very close to each other. Unlike some of the others in the past. So, on this one, the $98,000 would eventually come back to the county for going with Hagerty on this because it's part of the admin cost with the grant on the FMA. We just have to fund the contract up front to get started on this. $98,000 with Hagerty to prepare the grant application for the 21 FEMA flood mitigation grant opportunity. The application will support the buyouts of approximately 40 properties throughout the county, and these are severe to repetitive loss or repetitive loss properties. Estimated grant is at $12 million, and there will be no cost to the county when this grant is awarded.
And we'll recoup that $98,000.
That is correct.
Okay. They have a motion to that effect.
Move.
The funding source, we'll again, I guess disaster fund?
Disaster fund.
Is there any more discussion?
And these houses... They can't, once they're bought out, they can.
So what happens and why that grant, you say $12 million for 40 properties is high. We have to, after all is said and done and the property is purchased, the county goes and purchases it and then we get reimbursed. We demolish the structure and it turns into perpetual green space in perpetuity. So there's a lot of work to get that property to be considered green space at that point. So.
All right.
Turn them into parks.
Is that I think you can. You just can't put structures on it that would house people.
We did
people,
that in so. River Plantation.
Yeah.
What I was thinking.
We had a Rooster Park over there.
Yep. yeah, you can. We've got a few that have already done that, and as long as there's not a structure on it where it would house folks, yeah.
Yeah. When we were talking about LMI requirements, and you know, you hear a lot about federal funding, and we can do this, we can do that. We were working with Rebecca and all of Precinct 3 looking to come up with, do we have any areas there that would qualify for revitalization or parks and things to be? We don't have one area that qualifies for LMI in the entire Precinct 3. Not one area that qualifies, and it makes it hard. Federal funds aren't as...
And the county's getting in a position where those pockets of LMI opportunities that were there previous disasters, they're going away. I mean, the county's growth, as you guys saw, has kind of evened out, and so the individuals
Spreading
out, and so it's spreading. You know, folks that are moving to the county with higher income and higher jobs are spreading out as well, and it's pushing that pocket of LMI. They're getting much smaller and smaller, and to a point where it's going to harm our opportunities in the future.
And that's my whole point in bringing that up was, Rebecca, you know, we might want to really look at what opportunities we have with grants in the areas that we do qualify for LMI. We might want to spend some time looking, because there's with the census and everything.
Also, a constitutional amendment that's on the ballot now that would help address some of that
exactly
as well.
Exactly, if it passes. Yep.
Yeah.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Long conversation.
Motion carries. Thank you very much. All right. Elections. Susie, if you would kind of go over what we just went over with Amanda, and then we'll vote on it.
Yes, sir. Good morning. Consider and approve the supplies necessary to put the Hart Verity Duo voting system into service and name a funding source.
Okay, so that was the $341,400. And we have $240,000 in capital we added. Thanks, Commissioner Nowak. Thank you very much. And so we're able to take it all out of capital.
Robert, out of his fund.
Yeah, okay. So we're able to take it all out of CIP, correct?
Yeah.
All right. Do we have a motion to approve?
Second.
All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. Susie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. At this time, we're going to recess the Commissioner's Court and convene public hearings. So, Amy, if you'd take it away for us and just take us on down through, please.
Consider the replat of lots 1 and 2, block 2 of Montgomery County Business Park, to be known as Taco Bell Montgomery County Section 1 replat. The purpose of the proposed replat is to combine lots 1 and 2 into one restricted commercial reserve. No objections or concerns received prior to today's public hearing. The HOA has not been found. The plat is submitted for Commissioner's Court approval under County Engineer Agenda Item Number 16A. Is anybody here to speak about it? Okay. Consider the replats of lots 12, 13, and 14 of Buck Hill subdivision, to be known as the Cottage at Buckshot Landing replat. The purpose of the proposed Foster replat is to combine lots into one unrestricted reserve. We did receive some calls earlier this week about this, wanting to additional information. Our office pointed them to engineering and the permitted offices. They were also going to contact the Commissioner's Precinct. The HOA has not been found. The plat is submitted for Commissioner's approval by County Engineer under Agenda Item 16B. Is anybody here to speak about that? Precinct 4. Consider the partial replats of lots 9, block 6 of Splendora Estates, to be known as Splendora Estates partial replat number 2. The purpose of the proposed partial replat is to create 2 residential lots. No objections or concerns have been received prior to today's public hearing. The HOA has not been found. The plat is not ready today and may be submitted by the county engineer at a future date. But is anybody here to speak at the public hearing? And our last one. Consider the replat of Lot 1, Block 2 of Tower Glen North Subdivision, to be known as Tower Glen North Section 1, Replat Number 1. The purpose of the proposed partial replat is to reconfigure one lot into 2 lots. No objections or concerns received prior to today's public hearing. The HOA has not been found. The plat is ready for Commissioner's Court approval today under County Engineer Agenda Item 16C. Is anybody here? Great. And Judge, after we reconvene, we can probably make them in one motion if you'd like.
Very good. All right. Anything else, Amy? We're good? Then we will reconvene court and we'll take appropriate action. What I would like to have is a motion to approve all 3 of these, A, B, and C. We have a second. All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. All right, grants and community development. Rebecca?
Morning, Judge, Commissioners.
Morning.
Consider and approve the fiscal year 2022 Operation Lone Star grant application as stated on the agenda.
Can you explain what this $500,000 grant, what would...
Yes, sir. So this is part of the Sheriff's Office request for Border Patrol law enforcement needs, overtime, personnel, per diem. They're requesting $400,000 in backdated cost from August 1st of this year. Forward, this is a two-year grant. We're currently putting the grant application together, so there may be different costs as far as equipment, different needs as we move forward.
So this grant is for, you said border?
Sheriff,
for border
come on
patrol.
Up and, yeah, let's, if we can, have Sheriff come up and address this. Thank you.
So if y'all recall, Operation Lone Star was when the governor put the call out for detention staff to go down to the jail, or go down to set up detention centers for processing migrants that came across the border, illegal migrants. So we did that. We spent, I don't know, somewhere around close to $400K on all that, and that's money that y'all fronted through the court.
Right.
So this grant just dropped. So at the time, the grant didn't exist. It just dropped in October. So there was a very short window. It expires November 1st, so we have to get everything in by then. So we're asking for reimbursement on everything that we did down there, per diem, lodging, travel, overtime, salaries, everything. But then there's an opportunity to add some human trafficking software. That's more of an executive session topic, but I'll tell you that it's software that will help us, particularly on the detention side, two of them, to locate information on human trafficking that's going on currently in custody. So kind of good stuff.
Good.
So it's an opportunity. It's all there. We had to get an MOU, or essentially a letter of support from the sheriff in Val Verde, and he did that. So we're good to go for
and
Rebecca to do
that
part.
If this comes in, we'll just use that we'll just put that back where the money came from the beginning, I guess. It's all the money that was earmarked for law enforcement. Was this out of your budget, or was this out of...
This was your ARPA that you...
That's what I
It was $250 to the constables. But so there's no skin off your nose at this point, though. So I would like to continue to use that money. So if I'm able to pull it back on the state side, I'd still like to use the ARPA funds for some of the projects overtime projects
so
in the county.
So what you're saying is the overtime money that we allowed of the departments to do that...
Mm-hmm.
You used almost $400,000.
Reclass.
Let me finish.
Our auditor is
if I may, please.
For the record, clarify.
Sure.
It was not ARPA.
Please.
It sure. Was not ARPA?
Constable.
Thanks for cleaning that up.
Commissioner, we took the money, we gave it to everybody for overtime, wherever we got it. How much of that we gave you did you use for overtime if most of it was used down there? I mean, did you use the rest of it?
We used about $400,000 just at the border.
Yeah.
But this only goes back for 30 days, so we're not able to claim everything that we used. So we're able to claim somewhere around $300,000. I think that's the last number that I was given. So we'll still have to eat into some of that, but I'd like to continue to use that. I think you had an expiration date on it.
Will you continue to send guys down to the border?
No, we're done. Okay. They brought a vendor in that replaced us, so they pulled us all back.
But the constables, y'all are still using overtime, right? Y'all are still working overtime, doing...
Right. That overtime money you used for down there, which could have been used here.
And we are using it here, but we hadn't been using as much of it because we were trying to use...
Yeah.
That was our singular focus,
it's
the border.
Spent. So
not all of it, but yeah, we were... At the same time, we were still using it locally, but we were also using the lion's share of it down at the border. Does that make sense?
Do we know how much the money the constables have spent? Are they spending a lot of their overtime money?
I'm looking at that right now.
What was your portion, Sheriff? It was $1.9 million total of all agencies, I think. Was yours a half a million?
Half a million.
Yeah. Okay.
Move.
When this issue came up, the purpose of it was for overtime.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it has proved to be tremendously successful in a number of areas. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Commissioner, let me get back with you because we got some posting stuff, but I'll get you
a
number.
I do want to know, though.
Any more discussion?
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you, Rebecca. At this time, we're going to move to executive session. The court will recess for executive session pursuant to one or more of the following provisions of the Texas Government Code, to wit, Chapter 551, Subchapter D, Articles 551.071. We shall return. Thank you all. We're going to go ahead and resume court, and we're going to take action on the matter that we discussed in the executive session. I need a motion to approve resolution and order to settle claim number B190155 with Daniel Plake to sign the documents. Do I have a motion to that effect?
Move.
Second. All in favor? No. All opposed? Motion carries. All right. Thank you. Now, we have some other citizens here who would like to comment. We have time for citizen comments. If you're here and you'd like to do that concerning really pretty much whatever topic you want to do, please note that we have 3 minutes if you have anything to hand out. If you would just get permission from the dais here before you bring it to the commissioners. Is there anyone who would like to make comments? Yes, sir. Come forward if you state your name for the record. Also, we have allotted 3 minutes per person.
Yes, sir. Marlon Jones. Good afternoon, Judge Kehoe and commissioners. I was here at the commissioner's court meeting on May 25th to bring to the attention of the court a matter that is restricting small businesses like mine from working in and with Montgomery County. The current language in the Montgomery County subdivision rules and regulations states that a developer shall submit a geotechnical report prepared by a geotechnical engineer licensed in the state of Texas and employed by a company that is accredited by the American Association for Laboratory Accreditation, A2LA. The words employed by are extremely restrictive and does not allow small businesses and even mid-sized businesses that cannot afford to build an A2LA accredited lab, which is at least a six-figure investment, and we cannot work in Montgomery County without it. Because of this, I've met with Jeff Johnson, and he is in favor of revising that language, but he also said that I should talk to each one of the commissioners to present my request. I did the same thing in Harris County, not that it really matters here, but they also revised the language after meeting with ACEC and the TCEL, which are geotechnical governing boards that that advise the county. So my request is that I get to speak with each of you. I've reached out to each of your offices and hoping to speak with you in person or on the phone, because I've had to turn away work. I'm losing business working with existing clients that have moved into Montgomery County because it, you know, construction, residential development is booming here. So thank you, court. Thank you, commissioners. I look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it so much. Thank you for coming in. All right. Are there any others? Yes, sir. State your name for the record and your purpose.
All right. Thank you very much. My name is Keith Meyer. I'm a resident of the Walnut Creek Forest Subdivision, Montgomery County, Precinct 2. I'm here on behalf of the Walnut Creek Forest Property Owners Association and would like the record to reflect our objection to the routing of the proposed new thoroughfare referred to in the Montgomery County Thoroughfare Plan as the Butera-Decker Prairie Road Thoroughfare. The routing of the new thoroughfare as proposed would parallel the existing Stagecoach Road with an offset of approximately one-third of a mile and would bisect our subdivision and destroy property lots and homes. We've been assured this will probably never be built, but the property owners just wanted me to come here today to lodge our formal objection to that routing. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate you coming in. Thank you very much. Are there any other citizens who would like to make comment? Yes. Thank you for being patient with us from before. State your name for the record and your purpose.
Sure. Zoltan Carl, here to just provide just input on a proposed intersection development or change in the Woodlands. So thank you for your time and opportunity to speak today. The intersection of Grogan's Mill Road and Research Forest Drive has been reviewed on a number of occasions for both safety and traffic flow. Residents and businesses in the area have been vocal and opposed to anything but at-grade improvements for a number of years. At one point, there was a petition with a high number of signatures obtained to oppose the proposed overpass or diamond interchange options. Data shows that at-grade improvements will support traffic and safety goals through at least 2035. Data is also being questioned as traffic projections are proving to be inaccurate. The last 18 months have shown us that the world has changed. The new normal, minus COVID, does not equal the old normal. The way people work has changed, and with it, projected traffic volume, peak hours, and other facets are also changing. Clearly, there are a number of resounding voices of opposition to an overpass or any grade separation solutions at this intersection. Additionally, there's a very real need to have the four parties responsible working together, not in a vacuum or against each other. The intersection falls into the jurisdiction of Shenandoah, the Woodlands, Precinct 2, and Precinct 3. There's an ongoing concern that information is being kept not only from the residents, but the appointed individuals responsible for the proposed improvements. Transparency with and involvement of the residents, availability of data, and in a timely manner are requested and critical to the success of this effort. I'd like to commend Commissioner Riley on the at-grade improvements already implemented. They have provided an immediate and positive impact and have made the intersection safer for everyone. Lastly, the intersection of Lake Woodlands and Grogan's Mill Road has been part of the studies, but very little focus has been given to it. The level of service recorded there is lower, and the traffic volume is almost as high as the intersection at Research Forest. Improvements at Lake Woodlands intersection would have a much lower negative impact, as there are no residential areas present, and would further ease traffic overall, including the intersection at Research Forest Drive. I urge the court to consider only at-grade improvements at Research Forest intersection and look at the Lake Woodlands intersection for larger improvements. I also urge the court to work collectively and with the residents in a timely and transparent way. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Appreciate it very much. All right. Are there any other comments from our citizens? Yes, sir. Come forward and state your name for the record and your purpose.
My name is Kevin Patton. I live at 690 Twin Oaks Road in the old security subdivision. We talked to Commissioner Metz's office and received documentation from the engineers stating the road was 0.19 mile long. The part of the documentation was cut off, so we went to the clerk's office to get a copy of the documentation. When we received the copy of the documentation from the clerk's office, it states the road is 1 mile long, which goes completely through my property and twice as much back through the community and through several houses. So I need, where can I get a clarification on the length of the road? Because some of the neighbors have found out that that says 1 mile, and they've decided that they can drive through my property in easement.
The best of my knowledge is 1,300 some feet. I'll follow up on that shortly.
They provided me with that documentation, that the county engineer's documentation lines up with the deeds and the easements, but that one document says 1 mile. And so people are saying, oh, the road's a mile long. We'll use the county clerk. That's the document of record is what they're saying. Yeah.
Right. What water was established long before I got there, but you have my word. I'll follow up on that and see what I can.
Okay. I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah.
When I bought my property, it was at the end of Twin Oaks Road. They told me it was landlocked, but I had a private easement out to Twin Oaks Road to get there, which is at the end of the 1,378 feet, give or take, what the county says the road is. But with this other document stating the road's a mile long, people are saying, oh, well, we can just drive through. It's a public road.
Okay. Commissioner, you'll get with them.
I'll follow
up. Yeah. You'll follow up with me on that? Okay.
I will. Get a number for him, please, folks.
All right.
Back here, she's the chief of staff. If you give her a number, we'll reach out to you shortly.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that to us.
Thank you for your comments. Thank you, Judge.
Are there any other comments? All right, if there are none, there is a miscellaneous item. We have a special session that was scheduled for this Thursday, the 28th. It has been canceled and moved to Wednesday of the following week, which is the 10 a.m.
What's the date on that?
All right, and the date on that would be December.
Wednesday, 11-3.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So also, everybody go vote. Early voting is going on right now. Everybody go vote.
Speak up
real
loud.
Probably shouldn't say how to vote, though.
I'm not saying how to vote. I'm just saying early voting until October 29th. Go vote.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second to adjourn. All in favor?
Uh-huh.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, Commissioner Riley,
whoa,
you have the floor. Pardon me? Need a motion to adjourn. There a second. There you go. Thank you. Thank you for being accurate. We appreciate that so much.
Sorry you couldn't hear Robert Walker was talking.
But you did hear his vote to adjourn.
I did. Thank you.
All right. All right, Commissioner Riley, you have the floor. Toll road.
Okay. We're going to open the meeting of Montgomery County Toll Road. All the directors are present. Are there any citizens that would like to comment on anything for the toll road? See anybody? We've got one agenda item that's considered approved and authorized budget amendment to allocate end-of-year revenue and expenses for Montgomery County Toll Road Authority. Amanda, you want to...
This is to clean up the revenues and expenses for year-end procedures.
All right. Do we have a motion?
Move.
Or a second? All in favor?
All in favor?
Opposed? Motion carries. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm old habits die hard, Commissioner. Proceed. I apologize. I thought I was still in charge. I apologize.
Charge. Motion carries. We need a motion to adjourn.
Hey, before you do, Commissioner, I want to congratulate Commissioner Riley on your efforts over there and the award that you received, I believe, this past week in regards to the 249 toll road.
Yes, sir. We're going to bring something to the court, next court.
Okay. Didn't mean to overstep. I appreciate what you've done over there.
I do appreciate it.
Congratulations.
I need a second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. We're done. Thank y'all.
I think you should give the